Here we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 180. And this is Stephen Zimmer coming at you live from the heart of the bluegrass in Lexington, Kentucky. And joining me tonight on the mic, and well, there actually is a mic on the mic tonight from Indianapolis, Michael West, and who just came in the nick of time. And we also have Daniel Dark as the other co-host with me tonight. Good evening, gentlemen, and another Wednesday begins.
Yeah.
This is going to be one Indiana party with our guests tonight, though. Oh, man. But yeah, so we better get to the coverage of what's been going on, because I know that, I guess we got updates and crazy stuff flying, 100 miles an hour right now. So, Michael, go ahead and take the stage, and then Daniel, you next, and I'll finish it up.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty much exhausted. I've been trying to get everything together for Horror Hound, which is begins this Friday night here in Indianapolis, it's going to be the largest. It's going to be the largest Horror Hound it's ever been. It's going to be three times larger than the Cincinnati event.
Wow!
And it's already clocking in at one of the largest genre events in the country, given the
Very
space
cool.
that they have.
Not bad.
And
not
bad. I have books. I have lots of books.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, we had the watch on trackers for that, but I wasn't worried.
Oh, I apologize. I meant to. I don't know that I ever called and told you that I got the books, but
no, I knew.
Yeah,
thanks to UPS tracking codes.
There you go. But so I've got plenty of books to sign for everybody, and been hard at work on final novel for the Legacy of the Gods. Still, it is coming together. It's kind of cool to see all these threads that have been dangling for years finally coming together. To that end, I had a conversation over the weekend with the illustrator and
Angar.
There's gonna be some...
I love saying his name. So cool. It's such a cool name.
He is awesome. He just he just gets better with every illustration he does.
He started. He was a young fellow, and his main guy was was a Marvel Comics artist and his instructor and mentor. And so yeah, he's just the sky's the limit. That kid just keeps on getting better and better and better.
Yeah, and that's really what I was thinking actually when I saw the cover that he had done. And if you go to my Facebook page or the Seven Star website or the my website, you'll see the cover that he created for this last novel, and it looks straight out of Marvel. It's really really cool, and so I can't wait to see what he's doing for the interior illustrations. For all the Legacy of the Gods fans out there, there will be a love scene illustration, but it'll be a little bit different. It'll be a little bit different than what you're used to. So from these books,
fantastic.
I'm really, it's like for a long time, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was because it was the last book and I was saying goodbye to the characters and the characters didn't want to say goodbye or whatnot, but it just seemed to take forever for the book to kind of like get off the ground, even though it was, you know, it's like usually the first third of any book is for me is the toughest. Once I get through the first third, it usually just slowly, you know, the autopilot just kicks in and it just comes together. But you would think that, you know, with it being the last book in a series that you've been doing for, you know, off and on for, I mean, I started the first draft of book one, Poseidon's Children, in 1989. So this is actually the 30th anniversary of when I started that first draft of Poseidon's Children. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been with these characters forever. So you would think that it would just be like, you know, putting on a pair of slippers, you know, just be comfortable and just go for it. But it just took forever for this to get off the ground. But now I got to say that this book here has some of my favorite scenes of the series. So I can't wait for it to be done, but I can't wait for it to get into the hands of the readers. It's going to be awesome. So, and then
the New Frontier keeps chugging. I mean, your audiobooks have you know, fully reintroduced, you know, things to new readers, you know, 'cause those are brand new in that market.
Right. I was just about to say that it's kind of an audiobook evening tonight that we're celebrating. But in my case, the audiobooks for Cinema and Cinema of Shadows and Poseidon's Children are out now. And, you know, it's, you know, the two very different narrators, but equally amazing in their own rights. And it just the comments I've been getting on from people who have, you know, the nice thing is that for years I go to conventions and whatnot, and people, you know, who for whatever reason either don't read, or the only chance that they get to, you know, the reason they like audiobooks is because they you know, drive trucks or whatnot, and they can't read, but they like to listen to books for that long trip. For years they've been asking me, you know, are your books on audio? Are your books on audio? And it just really feels good to finally be able to say, yes, yes, they are. And here they are.
Yes, they are.
It's just, you know, I can't say enough about what a wonderful job these narrators are doing on this. And Spook House and the other Legacy of the Gods books are in production as well. And they'll be coming down the pike very soon. So everything's pretty much rolling in Westworld when it comes to the audio front.
Well, next thing we got to do, Michael, is down the road, if we can pull it off, reach that level, is release, like, Poseidon's Children, the audiobook on vinyl. Like, you get 16 records in, like, this big-ass, you know, slipcase box.
Yeah. Oh, with like, blue liquid in it. So it's like a CD for Poseidon's Children. So yeah.
Something like the Tool, like the band Tool, the way they do the fancy packaging. We'll have to get them to consult with us, because they always have fancy packages.
Well, I just got a thing today from Sacred Bones Records, and I didn't order the vinyl because right now I don't have a turntable. But I mean, I've got a turntable, but I don't have it hooked to anything at the moment. So, I ordered, they sent me a thing that they did this like double vinyl set for an expanded edition of the John Carpenter score for the last Halloween movie that came out last year. And I got the CD of the expanded edition, but they had a really cool vinyl setup where it actually looks like it's on fire when it's spinning.
Nice.
And like the cover is the Halloween mask in flames, like from the end of the movie. And so the vinyl, it's really, there's a YouTube video out there. If you get a chance, look it up. But they spin it, and it looks like it's on fire as it's going around the turntable. It's just really cool.
Very cool, man. Very cool. And, chat room is underway tonight, folks. We got a good bunch in there already. Of course, Thomas Moore, a great filmmaker, and we'll give him a shout-out for the Southern Oasis Film Festival in Knoxville, Tennessee. Get your submissions in, filmmakers. You can get your submissions in via Film Freeway on that one. We got Nathan Day, author of Orphan Surfacing, and he is lurking in the chamber. And we also have Sandy Lender, who you know very well, is one of our great supporters of the show. Great author. But yeah, they are there. And Sandy reported, by the way, that Dorian, she lives in Florida, and Dorian is, you know, kind of moving out. So where she lives in Florida, and it luckily, unfortunately, thank God, did not get hit as hard as they were fearing earlier. So that is very, very good news. I'm glad to hear that Sandy is okay with all of her feathered family members down there. And yeah, that's definitely something we've been thinking about a lot here, and glad to hear that good news from Sandy. And we'll go to Daniel Dark, and we'll get an update from him, and then I'll give you a quick little bit of news, and then we'll recognize this week's sponsors, and we have two guests. So Daniel, fire away for a update on stuff, because you're close to finish on something.
I am within days of finishing on a new book, and then we can start a couple other. We can start finishing the next book. The next book has already started. It just needs to be vamped out and written and everything. But
very nice.
I am within days of finishing the book. I had a few little fiascos go on this week and stuff, which kept me from being able to be at the turntable of the keyboard for a little while. But you know,
right?
That, you know, life happens, and then you get back to work.
Yeah. Yep, we know. Yeah, definitely can relate. Yeah, definitely a lot of curveballs and thrown at all of us here, all three of us. But we're glad to hear that the progress is back on track, and probably next week, who knows? I mean, it might be giving us some great final news on that project.
Almost definitely next week.
And Sandy says in the chat room, good to hear Mr. Dark is back and hope he's on the mend. So they're well wishing you from the chat room as we speak.
I am back, Sandy, and you know, they can't kill me off, so
Nice.
Yeah.
And folks, I have some good news. Monday night, 5 years of work got completed. It wasn't 5 years to write my third novel, The Dark Sun Dawn Trilogy. It is larger than the first two books because it's one hell of a grand finale, and I really, you know, I pour my heart into all my work, and this is no different. But I finally got to the point where I'm ready to hand it to the editor, and it's officially as a manuscript done. And so I printed it out on Tuesday, and I always traditionally print out a copy because it's sort of like a way of a little ritual I do to kind of accent that idea of completion is holding that in my hand. And so it is done. The follow-up to Heart of a Lion and Thunder Horizon. And this one took about 7 months to write, and it is it's done. So, between the three books, 5 years, and feels good. And, Sandy, it's a great – she says, off to the editors, a great feeling. Congrats. And, yeah, it is, Sandy. You know, and all of you in the chat room know what I speak of because you're all book people. So, it's – yeah, you know what I mean. It's it just feels good to get that final bit done, and now it's off to editing, and hopefully – yeah, I've got good, clean copies. So they can have a, you know, good time going through that. But
and from what I saw, if you don't like it and everything, after you buy a copy and read it, you can always glue the pages together and use it as a chalk for your car and everything, keep the car from rolling. So,
yeah, nice. Oh Lord, no, it's single sided manuscript printout, so it's not. It's a little bit bigger than A Dream of a Navigator. It's smaller than any of the books in my Rising Dawn saga or Fires in Eden series. So it's not near the biggest, but it's definitely definitely a little bit in that mid-range when it actually eventually becomes the actual printed book. I mean, Yeah, the manuscript printouts look big because they're single-sided, double-spaced, you know. But yeah, it's not that.
Yeah, you're holding up that manuscript, and it's like taking both hands to hold it up.
Yeah, it is a chunk. It is a chunk.
I always get to a certain point in the manuscript, and I'm like going, you know, if I was writing a novella, I'd be done by now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had that sense because I have been doing some novellas during this time, and so yeah, I mean, I definitely consciously thought of that a few times. I'd be like, yeah, I had a couple novellas done by now. You just gotta keep motoring. It's gotta end. Like Michael's going through the same thing. I mean, you get to that final book, it has got to be a grand finale. It's gotta be tight. It's gotta tie up everything. You know, that's been the series. It's gotta, you know, it's very important. You know, you can't. It's got to be the big fireworks show at the end. And
it can't be lost.
Yeah. No. No. No.
Just leave the whole series as a cliffhanger.
So it's got to be a good book, and it's got to be a good conclusion for the series. So it's got two major tasks. So yeah, that's why you don't do
like Stephen King does sometimes. Just leave the end of it like a cliffhanger, and you're like,
no,
really?
Well, like, it's fine, but not my thing.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem because in this series the last two books have ended in cliffhangers. But this book, I got to wrap everything up. So,
right. Okay. Let's see. Nathan asked me, in the chat room, he wanted to know what the title was. Yes. I should mention that there is a title for this book. It's called When Shadows Fall. So Heart of a Lion, Thunder Horizon, and When Shadows Fall. And that's it. And, we have RG Westerman entering the chat room. Just in time to get our sponsors acknowledged, and then we will go right to our guests. They're running about a minute behind, but that's not a bad thing on the Star Chamber show, where we tend to have lots of conversations. So here we go. Tonight, our sponsors are Mary Ann Pohl, and we also have Perth Bastet Publications, and I will go with Mary Ann Pohl first. Raven's Cove, an iconoclast thriller, supernatural battle for a small Alaska town. Raven's Cove, a town coveted by a sinister enemy, where frightening legend holds the key to survival. Murder heralds the advancing darkness. A battle will rage. To lose means destruction of the body, annihilation of the soul, and an end to Raven's Cove. Available on Amazon.com at www.author.maryannpohl.com and where all good books are sold. And I will spell that for you. That's www.author.maryannpohl.com. Maryannpohl.com and where all good books are sold. And thank you, Marianne, very much for your support of the show. And our second sponsor tonight is Per Bastet Publications, and I will give them a plug. They are appearing in Lexington, Kentucky this weekend at Lexington Comic and Toy Convention Fall Fest. So if you're around Central Kentucky, go see them this weekend. They'll be setting up at that convention right here in my backyard. And here's something about them. Per Bastet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 30 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bastet offers a little bit of everything. Check out Joanna Foreman's award-winning romantic thriller, Riverwalk Chameleon, or try Ghost Tour Guides, Jacob and Jenny Floyd's Louisville Strange and Unusual Haunts, and Indiana's Strange and Unusual Haunts. Travel back to ancient Egypt with Teeley Harris as the eloquent scribe and see just how much trouble a temple cat can drag an innocent young scribe into, or head for the future in Marian Allen's science fiction short story collection, Other Earth, Other Stars. You can find these titles and more at PerBastetPublications.com at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at Lexington's Comic and Toy Convention Fall Fest in September, Louisville's Imaginarium Convention in October, Per Bastet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. So thank you, everyone at Per Bastet, Teeley Harris, Marian Allen, and Sarah Marion. So we are underway. We are underway. So, yeah, and, yeah, we will be getting you, by the way, later in the show. I'm going to ask for a code to be sent to me so that we can give you for Imaginarium. It's one bit of news I forgot to mention, so I can get that. I will get Holly to send that to me so I can read it right off. But we did have a hotel code that we want to make sure people got for Imaginarium. But I will. We are running just a little bit behind, so I'm going to get our guests on tonight, and I'm going to announce both of them, because I'm going to bring them both on at once, because tonight is kind of a spotlight on both, and for a very good reason. And the first is an author, and this author is one that Michael and I know very well, and know and love, I might say, and out of Indianapolis, and he is the author of some great stuff. I mean, novels like Haunting Blue, Virtual Blue, also, you know, in science fiction, Commanding the Red Lotus. So, yeah, we're talking paranormal urban fantasy. We're talking science fiction. And the paranormal book of the hour that he wrote and that we're going to be talking about tonight, Haunting Obsession, and that is the man, myth, legend himself, R.J. Sullivan. And joining him tonight is, for the first time on the Star Chamber Show, we have a voiceover actress and audiobook narrator with over 20 years experience in acting. And they both came together in the recent Haunting Obsession audiobook. And this is the one and only Danielle Muthing. And Danielle and RJ, you're both on the Star Chamber Show. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
Man, how are y'all doing tonight?
Good to hear you.
Nice to hear you.
Well,
are you ready? Are you ready to answer questions that you don't want answered?
Oh God!
I have a question. Does speakerphone work with this, or should I just stick to listening with my, you know, normal way?
You sound good right now. I mean, I'm not getting any kind of problem right now. So
okay,
you sound,
let me
you sound
try
absolutely
to go back
fine.
On. Okay, good. Well, we'll stick with
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Yeah, RJ and Danielle, I've been looking forward to this one. And of course, I know RJ. I've heard Danielle a lot because of this Haunting Obsession audiobook project. So I have gotten very familiar with your voice, Danielle, but it is nice to actually speak with you live.
So finally talk to the real person,
cool.
right?
Yes. And Holly definitely sends her hello because she, you know, she has loved interacting with you all on this particular
yeah.
project. Of course, in the rotation, she's not co-hosting tonight, but she does send her love and really definitely has enjoyed working with you guys. But I guess that's where we'll start is the audiobook, Haunting Obsession. That's a RJ or Danielle, would you like to tell us how you got together as quite the team, writer and narrator?
Right. RJ, why don't you start, and then I'll fill in.
Sure. Well, you know, you guys released Haunting Obsession back in 2012, and that was the first project that Seven Star and I worked on together, and that was a whole lot of fun. It's probably still my most successful book. And so it's been 7 years, which, you know, I joke that this is the 7-year itch anniversary of the book. And, we wanted to do something special, but I remember, Stephen and I talked a couple years ago, me saying that, you know, if we ever got a chance at it, Haunting Obsession, I think would make a particularly good audiobook. So I'm really pleased that when you guys decided to take the plunge that you worked with me to get that out there as quickly as it came together. And so Holly was all for it when you guys were taking initial titles. And I'm really pleased that it's one of the first ones out there. But, I mean, just we put the audition out there, and as soon as I heard Danielle's, I knew that was the one. So.
Yep.
It's one of those things where you hear the audition and you can tell they just get it. You know, it was like she totally gets how this needs to be done. So there really was no decision really to be made at that point. We just got her on board.
Yeah, it was nice when I saw the listing. I saw a Marilyn Monroe-esque character and impression, and I went, oh God, I want this one. So it was nice that I got it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, yeah, what attracted you to do the audition for this book, and had you previously read RJ's work, or was that something you kind of investigated after seeing the listing?
I hadn't read anything by him before that. Once I saw it, I went and that's kind of what you do, is you do a lot of research on the author and on the book itself and everything that you can find about it. And honestly, it was the Marilyn Monroe thing. I was like, yay, I get to do my Marilyn Monroe impression. This is great. So, and it's always hard because you do the auditions and then you kind of have to just walk away from them because you never know. It's not like in theater where you have a set date of when you're going to hear about it. It's you just kind of walk away and hope that you hear about it. And eventually I did. So that was nice.
Well, I will say on our end, I mean, when we do the audiobooks, we want the author to, you know, make the final, you know, sign off on who's narrating, because it's their work, you know, so that obviously RJ, you know, is definitely the one that, you know, gave the final go ahead. But when we first heard your audition, I mean, we were excited and we were, you know, quietly hoping, you know, that RJ feel the same way, because it was great. And I'm glad that the Marilyn Monroe thing attracted you. I will say, let's give a shout out to Bonnie Wasson, because that Haunting Obsession cover art is gorgeous. And Bonnie Wasson did the cover on that one. And yeah, that's just, wow. I mean, yeah, it brings it through.
She did a special poster print of that for me, which I'm sitting here looking at on my wall right now. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's, you know, three times the size of the novel, and it's just a gorgeous piece of art. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that I'll tell you, as a narrator and even as a reader, the cover art can pull you in before anything else about the book. And I do remember seeing that cover and thinking, okay, what's this about? And then reading the description, and I just thought, yep, this is, I get this book. This book
nice.
Is to me. Let's do this one. Yeah.
Well, I remember
have,
I put in
folks.
The.
Oh, go ahead, RJ.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say,
oh,
I remember
I was just
going to
say
put,
real quick
think...
that Danielle has some folks in the chat room that have heard the audiobook, and they're sending in some compliments for sure. Let's see. RG Westerman says she has an amazing voice, and then Nathan Day says yes, she does. So they've got a few people that, in the chat room that have heard this. So yeah, definitely got
Thank
some
you.
Kudos already there. And hi to Carol
awesome.
Preflat as she just joined us there.
Thank you. That's amazing. Thank you.
As an author, you know, I've had to read these pages, and of course, trying to do the female voices in my books is kind of silly. So it was just amazing to hear somebody who can take something that you've written and do actually make it better than how you imagined it could sound. And that was the experience listening to the audition when we first heard it. So. I don't think I could have been more pleased. So.
Good.
Well,
that's always good to hear.
Would you all? We did. Thanks to Holly, she did send me over the audiobook sample MP3 from this project, and we do have it loaded up in the system, so we actually can give everybody a little 3-minute sample here tonight on the air, if you guys would like to do that and then maybe comment on that.
Absolutely.
So
I love
that sound.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I should have the levels about right. So everybody kick back, and it's about a 3-minute sample from the R.J. Sullivan novel, Haunting Obsession, narrated by Danielle Uthing. Here we go.
Jeannie Bracken snuck into her apartment and shut the door. She hoped the landlord hadn't heard her come up the stairs. She leaned against the door, breathing in the hot, humid air of unventilated living space. Tiny splinters poked through the thin sundress, pricking her shoulders and back. She looked down at herself, noting with some distress how her yellow sundress clung to her damp skin. As much as her admirers loved that sort of peekaboo look, and as much as, on certain days, she loved how they loved that sort of peekaboo look, Today her breasts hung heavy, a pair of sandbags pulling at her shoulders and draining her strength. Her hair, full and billowing and bleached icy blonde, all the rage these days, her manager said, hung in wet clumps across her forehead. Jeannie drew her manicured fingers through her scalp and pushed the strands up and out of her eyes. The mass flopped in a limp wave to one side. She spied herself in the hall mirror. "You had better be worth it, little miss." She waved a finger at the image she barely recognized. For the past month and a half, she'd followed her agent from spa to spa. New hair, new eyelashes, new nails. Then a trip to the state office to make her new name official. "A new name." She said it out loud into the air, still getting used to it. "Maxine Marie." Today's errand toward her transformation also involved a consultation for a surgeon to sculpt a new nose, a procedure scheduled for next month. "Being glamorous really isn't all that glamorous, that's for sure." She drew another sigh, lifting the bosom that turned so many men's heads, then dragged herself over to the kitchen table and stabbed a finger at a button on the base of the table fan. The blades hummed to life, pushing stale air over her skin. She plopped down into the chair and closed her eyes, letting the blast of air lull her. Today, she'd returned from her first shoot and barely had time to hit the bank before a knock at the door made her jump.
"Jeannie, open up. I heard you turn on your fan through the door. I know you're in there."
"Crap." She jumped to her feet, stepping toward the door and cracking it open. She spoke to the towering presence looming in the hallway. "Hi, Roger. Is rent due already?"
"No, Jeannie. The rent is not due today. The rent was due last week, and you know it."
Roger removed the cigar from his lips and blew a thick cloud of dust at the crack of the door.
"I need something, or you're out on your ass."
"I'm sorry, Roger. Hold on a minute." She shut the door and removed the chain lock. As the door swung open, she chose to ignore how her landlord's angry glare changed to a not-so-subtle leer.
And that's it. That wraps up the sample. How'd you like that, folks? Love it.
little Cyndi Lauper queen sneaking in there, of course, I have to think.
Good old Roger.
Oh, yes, but on that note, RJ, Sandy said someone has to tell you that she is a Cyndi Lauper fan, too, and dressed up as Cyndi for Halloween one year. So we do have a Cyndi fan in the chat room, RJ. So.
All right. Yeah. Always good to hear.
So, but as you were saying?
Well, I was saying that's one of those examples where because Danielle is a fan of Marilyn's, I didn't have to tell her the speaking voice of the landlord was similar to the speaking voice of the landlord in The Seven-Year Itch. She picked up on that and put that accent in there on her own. So, I mean, as I was listening to the proof as it was coming in, you know, you get this sense that people get it, and it validated all those, the choices she made so closely matched to the ones I had while I was writing them. So it was really neat to hear. So it was the point
Very
that I was
cool.
making there.
Yeah, that was fun. There's so many Marilyn Monroe references throughout the book and things. I mean, I've always been obsessed with her, so it was really fun. Hey, I had a haunting obsession myself. But so it was fun to, like, read that and just be able to bring it to life. It was fun. I had a great time.
So what part of the book did you actually send it as your sample?
As the audition?
Yes.
What was the audition? RJ, I don't remember.
The audition, there were two short scenes. One was a scene I commonly read, I'll call it the morning after scene, where Maxine has first appeared, and
after a night of haunting.
She's haunted Daryl that night, and then the next morning he wakes up, He thinks it's a dream until she appears in. He thinks he had this crazy dream until she appears in front of him, and it's actually pretty fun to read. There's a lot of comedy involved, and it's only a couple pages long. But I knew that if the person auditioning could get that interaction, I knew that we had something good. And then the second scene was the other two characters, Rebecca Burton and Loretta. First meeting each other at a coffee shop, and Loretta is in great distress and Rebecca's trying to comfort her. And those were the four main characters. I think it was about four pages all total, but it was two short scenes pulled from different parts of the book that allowed me to hear pretty much all the major characters speaking in a short audition. It worked out really well. I could tell that this was going to work as soon as I heard it.
Yeah. Yeah, I always like the ones where I get to do all the different voices. I think it's smart. I think it's smart to pick those kinds of auditions because you need to hear that people can do what you're looking for.
Right. And Loretta had a Southern accent as well as the Maryland. And then Rebecca has sort of a cool Mr. Spock kind of a voice. And so she did all three of those well.
I remember I went almost like full Foghorn Leghorn with Loretta, and you were like, you could just pull her back a little.
Yeah.
All right, Michael, do you have anything that you like to explore? Because you've enjoyed the process yourself going through your first two.
Yeah, I mean, I had a similar situation with the audition that we sent out for Poseidon's Children, in that I picked a scene where it was basically the entire cast of heroes, basically, and it was kind of like a, you know, conversations that they were having back and forth, and that way I figured I could get a sense of, do they know what these people sound like? And it was going along great until we got to the Asian archaeologist character, and I made the mistake of putting in the synopsis that she has a hint of an Asian accent, and what we were getting from most of the auditions was like full on fa ra 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 ra. And so, you know, the guy that ended up doing the book nailed everybody. I mean, he nailed everybody. But then when it came to her, again, it was just, you know, the you know, R's for L's and everything. And so I said, go and watch. I said, have you seen Pacific Rim? I said, if you watch a scene with the main girl in Pacific Rim, you know, where she's talking perfect English, but she just has a hint of an accent. I said, if you can submit the audition again and nail that, you got it.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. He resubmitted it with her having, you know, the same intonation, but just, you know, not the caricature. And it was perfect. So, you know, when he submitted that, I'm like, this is our guy. But it is interesting because I did want a woman to narrate the Harmony books, just simply because there are and there's a lot of female characters in the Legacy books too. But it just seemed like especially Cinema of Shadows, the first one, with it being told from a you know, they tend to, there's a lot more, you know, points of view in there that were with the female characters longer in those books, it seems like. So I felt a female narrator would be better suited for those books, and so it is interesting to hear, you know, a man do the female voices in the one series and the female narrator do the male voices in the other. So it you know, and they nail them. They do. They really do a good job. And you know, just like that clip we just heard. You know, it's you know, like you said, 7 year itch. I was right there. But you know, it just strikes me. It's funny because my future daughter-in-law, we recently had a wedding shower that was themed Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were playing Breakfast at Tiffany's in the background during the shower. And, oh, my God, that Mickey Rooney character. I'm just like, how? I'm like, number one, that would never to fly today. But I'm just sitting here wondering, how did they think that this was okay?
Different times, man, different times.
Yeah.
It is crazy, though. You watch some of that old stuff, and you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah. But in terms of Hollywood,
it's like John Wayne and
Genghis
Khan, you know?
Yeah, you would have thought that by 1968 they'd have known better, but there it is.
Right.
But nope.
Right.
Yep.
And I mean,
you had Sulu on Star Trek by that time. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Right. Well, and you think about it, even in Christmas Story, like you have the caroling when they go out to the restaurant on Christmas
right.
Day, and you have the carolers, and it's like, that was the 80s. We still didn't quite know that we should.
Yeah.
Not
right.
that I don't love that movie, but you
well,
know what I mean.
But at least they had Asian actors doing it.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's better?
Yeah.
Well,
right. Like,
no, I'm not saying it's better, but it is better in that it's
one
not,
step
like,
better.
I mean, yeah, it's
a step better,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. But
oh,
still
Lord.
Not great.
one thing to complain about.
right. No, I was going to say when you were talking about the accent in your book, that was first off, I need to watch Pacific Rim so I can hear this accent too. But yeah, you have to be so careful when you're doing that kind of stuff because you know you don't think about. I want to go over the top with this. You don't want it to be a stereotype necessarily.
Right.
Yeah, and you just have to be so careful.
It's a fine line.
Yeah. It is. It's tough sometimes.
And Haunting Obsession is kind of written with a sense of the melodrama. And I knew that,
absolutely.
You know, you had to write a really
yeah.
fine line between playing it up but not overplaying it. And I think that you did a really great job of really bringing out the best of the book without overplaying it. And that was a tough line to follow. I was, you know, listening to it from beginning to end, I was like, okay, let's see how she does. And I thought, you know, it was right exactly where it needed to be. So, yeah.
Well, and it's interesting though, because you know, I've listened to audiobooks on trips before. And there, you know, a lot of older audiobooks, and it seems like the audiobooks that we're seeing now are far closer to almost radio plays than the earlier audiobooks.
Yeah, a lot more sound effects and music and things like that, and or just yeah, like doing the voices and bringing the characters more to life than just reading the words. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, because I was listening. I pick up my son from work because he's 21 years old and doesn't have a driver's license, and don't get me started on that. But I was picking up my son from work, and I was listening to the proof of the audiobook in the car as I was doing it, and he's like, are they supposed to be acting it out like that? And I said, isn't it great? You know, but it's like the guy, he was like, well, you know, they're not just reading the book. They're like giving a full on performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree, and that's what I actually enjoy about it. You know, I've entered an interesting time personally where I find reading much harder than I used to. Like actually picking up a book and reading the words on a page. Like by the end of the day, I just want something. I want something kind of done a little more passively. I didn't used to get the audiobook thing. Honestly, about 6 months ago, I started listening to some of the older sci-fi classic stuff on audiobook because it was just easier than trying to read it again. And I don't necessarily say that like I'm happy about it, but it's just the truth, you know? And it's like, oh, I really, yeah. I actually get this audiobook thing now and I actually enjoy it. So it's interesting that Seven Star chose to take the plunge right about the time I was starting to appreciate them anyway. So
that's because we have a haunting obsession with R.J. Sullivan, and we
there,
were just
that must be
with
it.
Him.
Yep.
Yes. But we do have a question in the chat room, and I don't want it to get too far down the line here. From R.G. Westerman, and this is for Danielle. What kind of equipment or technique would you recommend for an aspiring audio reader who may or may not have once been an actor and is now an author performing artist? So I hope
my goodness.
Got that in. I can read it again if you'd like. That's a good.
Right. Let me start with, equipment. I could not tell you. I'm really bad at remembering like brands and things, but I went online and I did a lot of research on microphones, and then I went, wow, these good microphones are around like $500 to $600, and I thought, I am very cheap. I'm a very cheap person, so I found something that was right around $100, but still in the good category. And I really wish I could think of what it was called right now, but I can't. And then I set up a closet in my house to be my recording booth, and I sit in there and I record, and I do it all off my computer. Software wise, I use Audacity, free editing software. Someday maybe I'll get better, but honestly, I think it does a really good job. I do think it's really important. If you don't come from an acting background, which I do, but if you don't, or even if it's been a while since you've done any acting, to get maybe take some classes. There are coaches out there that work with audiobook narrators to get them ready for what they need to do. Look into that. Always good stuff to do. So, I think as an author, I know not a lot of authors record their own audiobooks, but I think if you can, it's really cool. When I listen to audiobooks, I like to hear if an author can do it. It's fun to listen to them read their own work if they can. Does that answer most of the questions?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Woohoo.
Yeah, they're listening very, their comments slowed, so they were listening to your every word while you were talking.
Writing.
There. So,
taking notes, all the notes.
Yeah, taking notes,
well,
I think.
A lot of the same stuff that you would use in a podcast or something that you're doing for, you know, really good, you know, quality, you can use in that.
Yes.
You've got several different things. Like Behringer has a podcast studio that's about $100. It gives you just about everything that you need to get started.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you can, you know, as you get going and everything, you can buy other stuff. You know.
Yeah.
And you buy, you know, the snowballs and stuff like that that you can, if you just want a mic that you can plug straight into your computer and just go with, you know, those are pretty good. They get pretty good ratings for $100, you know, $100 mic or something. And you can buy them online and everything for less than $100. But if you go to a store, you're going to spend out $90 to $100 minimum on a good mic that you'd want to use.
Yeah, I know. The only website I've worked with as far as doing audiobooks is called ACX.com, and that puts everything out on Audible and Amazon and all of that. To get to their specs, to get your audio to meet their specs, to be able to be accepted by them, it takes a lot. And I know I personally don't use a USB mic. I've heard that sometimes the sound that you get through those is a lot harder to get to those specs, but I'm not a big tech person, so I'm not, you know.
That's the reason you want to go through a mixer most of the time, you know, to put it in. But you, like I was talking about the Behringer, you know, podcast studio that gives you a small mixer. It gives you, you know, your mic. You can plug it into your computer. You can get the tuning equipment and everything for the computer. The one that Audacity is a great one.
It's
what I use on mine. And there, you know, but, you know, if you just want to find out, you know, what you sound like and stuff and see whether you can actually do it, because some people don't have the voice for it, and then some people do, and some people can't change their voice at all.
And then in my case, I did attempt a short story. I tried to read a short story through, I think it was Audacity is what I used as well, but I just found the editing just took forever, and I lost patience with it, and it was like I could get 10 pages written in the amount of time it's taken me to get this 5-minute clip the way I want it, you know, so I had thoughts for a couple days of putting a couple short stories out, and it's just not for me. It's not my thing. But I see the appeal of it. It's just the editing part just really dragged me down when I attempted it. I don't know about other people's experience, but
I was telling RJ the story of the book that I did right before Haunting Obsession. I was in tears while doing the editing because I hadn't learned a valuable lesson that I then learned through Haunting Obsession, and I trying to edit it, I just was losing my mind, and then I figured it out, and I was like, oh my God, this is so much easier, and then Haunting Obsession was like a breeze, but I was telling him, I was like, look, the editing part is just a nightmare, so, you know, bear with me, but he was very patient with me, so.
The main thing that I can tell somebody about it, you know, the equipment is almost secondary. You can spend out as much money as you've got to spend out, but setting up the room is the most important thing that you can do, so that you get rid of all echoes, different things like that, but you also get rid of all background noises.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
It's kind of hard because, like I said, I record in a closet in my house, but we took it. My husband does construction, so luckily he like pimped out my closet, and I have.
I was gonna say you have like a phone booth, kind of like a phone booth is what it looks like.
I do. It's like it does. It does kind of look like a phone booth, but it's actually mattress padding. He just hung it on the walls, and then he built me like a little table where I could work from, and I sit in there. Once I close the door, I have to close all the windows in the room. I have to close because I'm right by the back door, so I have to close the back door, which is usually open because my dogs go in and out of the house whenever they want. And I have to close the door to the kitchen or else you can hear the refrigerator when I'm recording. So I basically have to close off the whole room that the closet is in and then get in the closet and close the door. So I'm just completely blocked off. And it does pretty well.
And then some of the things that you don't think about is the noise from your computer and different things like that, that you're like, why am I hearing a whirring in this? And then you realize that it's just, you know, the hard drive on your computer and the fans and stuff. You're like, crap, what have I got to do for that?
I tried. When I first started, I tried to use an external hard drive to save everything just so I wouldn't take up all the space on my computer. And it was so loud, and I thought, oh, great, now I can't do this. Luckily, my computer is quiet, has a quiet fan, so you can't hear it. But so I went out and I got a flash drive that looks like Kylo Ren so that I could cope and save all my stuff on the flash drive, my nerdy flash drive.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. You just answered a question from Nathan Day. I was waiting for a moment to get it in, but you just answered the entire question, so we're already ahead of the game here. Oh, no, we have a follow-up question from RG on that. What do you read from, pages or screen?
Oh, yeah, I wondered that, too.
Yeah, I read from the screen. So I get, like, a PDF file, and then I set it up so that I see the words to the book are above the Audacity file. So I watch the recording while I read it, you know, and then I have it all happening right there in front of me. So yeah, that you don't want to read from pages if you can avoid it, because they make noise when you turn the page and then you have to edit all that out. So,
yep.
So the mouse clicking or anything like that doesn't matter, or how does that work?
It does. When you mess up and you have to click, you have to click and stop the recording and then restart it, because you want those spaces. You want to be able to see where you messed up so you can fix it. But yeah, that you just kind of get rid of those as you fix your mess ups as you go along.
I see. Okay.
And leave enough break in it that you can actually fix it instead of I've done it before where I've read too much and I've got too many things in there and you're like, like crap.
Right.
And there's not enough room to fix it there, you know, because if you're looking at a computer file and you've got to move it like, you know, a hundredth of an inch on your mouse to get it to fix. It's
right.
Not real good. If you've got a, you know, inch there that you can move it up, you know, down and everything and get rid of that part of the file, you've
yeah.
got a little bit better.
Yeah, it's
right.
Well, and RJ, I don't know if you've ever mentioned this to the world, but I did put together a blooper reel from this
yes.
book.
Oh. Yes, indeed she did. Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what we're going to do with that. It's going to be some sort of special promotion. So, but it's
sure,
very
on the end of the book.
A couple minutes.
Right.
What's that?
You should have put it on the end of the book, the blooper, you know, like they have it on,
we talked to,
on your
we
DVDs
talked about
and
that.
Stuff.
Great.
Yeah.
We talked about
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Well, you know, we'll use it as a giveaway or something, or, you know, join the discussion group and get a copy or something. We haven't quite figured all that out yet. I mean, we've got time. That's the thing. And, but it's definitely something that people are going to really enjoy. It's about, I think it's like 3 minutes of just all of her mistakes, but some very entertaining
right.
mistakes, including, I remember one where the dog starts barking in the middle of the sentence.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, and I don't know if you can hear them. They're, like, sitting outside barking right now. I'm like, shut up, guys. Come on. Of all days. Shut up. Yeah.
And, you
no
know,
doubt.
She drops a few F-bombs and some other stuff. It's a good time.
Me?
A good deal.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Fantastic.
I wasn't supposed to say that.
One of my favorite things about the blooper reel, about the book in general, was that I had a really hard time with the name Daryl. Which, of course, is, like, the main character. And like,
right.
So there were many moments of me going, Daryl, like, oh, and saying dirty words and moving on.
That's awesome. And RJ, have you, I know it's early because this is, like, a pretty brand new release at this point. Have you heard from anyone that has listen to the audiobook who had previously read the text version and what kind of comments, if so, did you get from them?
I haven't. I would love to get some feedback from people that have. Although I'll tell you, I'm listening to Chris Garrison's Blue Spirit, and I'm a couple chapters from finishing that. So I understand these things, you know. I can remember I could read a book in half a day or, you know, something like that because you just kind of speed through it. These things take a while, you know. I mean, 6 hours is 6 hours. What are you going to do, you know? So you got to break it down over several days. I just figured It's going to take some time for people to first get it, and then it's going to take some time to listen to it. So audiobooks are a process. I do believe there is some sort of cheat buttons, but for the most part, I listen to it at its actual speed because I want to enjoy the presentation as intended. And so it just is going to take some time. So, and I think that's worth it. Especially in this case, I think it's a lot of fun what we put down, and people are going to really enjoy it when they get to it. So I look forward to hearing about
just
that.
Just don't speed it up so it sounds like the chipmunks when she's reading it. So
yeah, right. Well, that's, I know you can do that, but it's nothing I would choose to do for sure.
Yeah, I haven't personally gotten any of these reviews, but I've seen them where people say, it sounded weird. I listened to it at 2x the speed that I, and I thought, well, yeah, it sounded weird. You're too fast.
Right.
I listened to it at 2x the speed, and it didn't sound exactly like what I thought it would. Huh.
Yeah, right.
God.
You know, I wonder what Michael West thinks, but I can only speak for myself. What really made this enjoyable is the fact that, you know, we're getting into some titles that are a few years old now, and I reread my stuff on occasion. It had been a while since I visited this, and the fun thing about coming back to it as an audiobook is that you're kind of reminded of things that you hadn't thought of in a while. And not only is it presented to you in a new way, but you're kind of reminded of kind of why you first loved it the first time when you worked on it. It's almost coming to it fresh again for me is what made this particularly exciting.
Yeah,
that's
no,
cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's weird too, because I'm writing the last book in the series right now. And I was listening to the first book in the series, and it just kind of made me think about things, you know, full circle about, you know, actually, it gave me some things that I had forgotten was in the first book. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, I should reference that somehow, you know.
It really is a neat way to go back and revisit material that you haven't in a while. From the author perspective, it's like, wow, I haven't thought of that in a while, and now here it is. It's brand new, and we get to share it all over again. You know, it really brings a fresh energy to the project.
Because usually if I do a reading at a convention or whatnot, I'll read from one of my short stories. I don't often read from the novels.
Right.
So, you know, and I think, too, it's like, I don't know if this is your experience, but, you know, it's like by the time you read it as you write it, You get it off to the editor, then you got to reread it as you do the edits. Then you might go through several rounds of edits. So by the time that the book comes out, you've read it like 50 times, you know. So it's like so you're kind of actually glad to not have to be reading it anymore and move on.
It was probably 2015 or so the last time I picked up Haunting Obsession and just read it through for fun. I mean, it had been a while. I mean, it's one of my favorites amongst my own work, but it had been a little while, and so that's what made this so much fun.
And you
said,
"Go, who wrote this? This is pretty
time.
Good."
Yeah, well, you know, maybe. I may have crossed my mind once or twice. Not saying it didn't.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome.
Not wrong to be proud of your own work.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
And I do want to say that, Michael, that is a cool point. I did not think of that. Yeah, you were literally writing the conclusion of your series while you were listening to the first audiobook of the first one. That is cool. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about full circle, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. That is awesome. And, Danielle, I wanted to ask, because obviously, I mean, you've got this didn't just happen overnight. You became this great narrator. you definitely have a background in acting. What is your background, and did it focus more on stage or screen or both?
Stage, mostly. I started, I've been acting and singing my whole life, and my mom is also a performer. So basically I was already in it when I was born. I became a professional actress 94, I believe, was the first show I was paid to do. So I've been doing that for a while now. I've kind of retired a little from the stage just because I wanted to get more into this audiobook thing. I direct more now. I do still sing. I go around to retirement homes and I sing for the residents there, and I absolutely love doing that. But no, I've been acting for a very, very long time. Getting into audiobooks is new to me. Haunting Obsession is my third one. So,
wow.
I had a friend. Yeah. Right. I had a friend who I did a show with about 5 years ago, and she started doing audiobooks a couple years ago. Her name is Jennifer Jill Araya. She's amazing. And she helped get me started. And then I kind of just took what I knew of acting and kind of put it into books and doing these auditions. And I'm learning a lot about the differences between, of course, acting on a stage and acting to a mic that's right in front of you. And I've always been a performer, so it came pretty easy.
Yeah, it really was one of those deals where, you know, you're just putting it out there for auditions to happen, and you just hope you find the exact right person, and you know the level you're going at, and you just hope you're going to discover someone who's just coming up. And it was just a perfect synthesis right there, where we just found the right person at the right time for the right project. I couldn't believe how lucky I was. So, y'all need to check it out. It's really good.
And yeah,
I'm actually
about
stunned. Yeah, I just want to say I'm stunned to hear that this was your third. Because I mean, when I heard you, I was like, oh, she's big league. I mean, fantastic.
Thank you.
I figured he had an arsenal.
I'm working on the arsenal
had three.
Yeah.
Because we had, just before Daniel asked his question, we had Marnie Young on this past year, and she's been doing a lot of audio work. She did, and she's a great guest to have on the show. Actually did her call-in from Grand Central Station in New York. Never had that before on Star Chamber show, I just figured you were kind of like her. I mean, you had like a million projects behind you, so I'm kind of surprised, but that is cool. That is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Daniel, sorry about that, Daniel. Go ahead, man.
About how long does it take you to go from getting a book to having a finished audio that you're ready to turn in, Danielle?
So the pros, who have been doing this for a long time, say that it takes 6 hours for every finished hour. So if a book is 1 hour long, it took 6 hours to do that 1 hour. I would say that it takes me longer than that. I don't quite know exactly how long it takes me at this point. I'm getting quicker. And I think I'll get to that 6 hour thing, but that's kind of how you figure it. It takes 6 hours per finished hour of a book.
I thought it went very quick. And I will say this about Danielle as well. When we started this, she said, "I'll get it to you by August," and she got it to me mid August. It was done. So I was like, okay, then. So that's always that's always a nice thing to have happen when someone gives you a deadline and they hit it, you know, exactly. Because I mean, we all know there's things happen, life happens, and you know, usually you hear that and you kind of go, well, that's okay. If it's September, it's fine too. And then, you know, to actually have it come in at the time they said they were going to get it is very refreshing. So.
Yeah, I try hard to set my goals correctly, and I don't like to miss deadlines, so I will do my best to make sure. And I remember, because we talked about, I had just taken my second book when you offered me Haunting Obsession, and I was like, oh no, you know, I have to do this one first, which was fine. I love that one too, but then I had all that trouble with the audio with the second book, and I remember saying to you, can I have one more? I need to extend it for 1 week. Is that okay? I like felt awful asking you that, and I think you were just like, yeah, like, fine.
Yeah. Yeah, 1 week's not a problem, especially
right.
Having heard the audition and knowing what I was going to get for it. I was like, absolutely, you can have a week. No worries. So, that was not a problem.
Well, did she give you an August of what year? You know, so.
Yeah, she might have been a year early. You never know, RJ. She might have met 2020 and got the year early.
See, I'm good.
That is awesome. Oh, so dare I ask, have you all talked at all about collaborating on any of the other RJ titles as of yet?
RJ, we are definitely like discussing it.
Cool.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, it's obvious you guys make a great team. I mean, there's no question. I mean, just yeah. I mean, it's yeah. From
I would
know,
really like to,
and narrators,
I would really like
click. Yeah.
I would really like to hear her impression of Blue. I think that could be very interesting. I mean, as you know,
that's,
I
was hoping
I have
you'd
material.
Say that. Yeah.
I have material to do. So this is a trilogy, and there's more after that. So. Yeah, we're definitely going to see what we can work out. I certainly hope it can happen, but
maybe a vampire story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, he's got one. He's got one, and Vampires Don't Sparkle.
Funny you
say
that.
Edited by Michael West, so that brings it full circle here. That is awesome.
That's true.
What a good question, Mr. Dark.
Yeah.
Watch Pacific Rim. Watch Pacific Rim before you do that one.
Okay. Good to know. Yes. Good. Note to self.
Oh God,
got
that's
it.
Awesome.
Oh yeah.
If you have not read that yet, Danielle, RJ has a phenomenal piece in that actually is a really unique take on the whole vampire thing. I mean, it really is very unique.
It's a J-pop robot that gets possessed by a vampire.
Pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Danielle, you have Darkness with a Chance of Whimsy as the last story in that collection. It was originally in Michael West's edited anthology. Yes, called Vampires Don't Sparkle. But it was put in my short story collection. So you do have it.
Okay.
Because every time I hear people talk about Vampires Don't Sparkle, your story always comes up in the conversation. I mean, it really is one that got noticed. And I'm not saying, mm-hmm. if you look at the list of writers on that, I mean, we had some, I mean, Maurice Brodus, we, you know, Gary Brownback, I mean, it has some amazing writers on that. But every time, I mean, I always hear RJ's story brought up in the conversation. So, I mean, that's why I always, I always think of that right away.
Short story about a short story. He had actually turned in a different story to begin with, and for whatever reason, I don't think this is right for the collection. And then he said, what if I do a story called Robot Vampire? And I'm like, if you can come up with a story to go with that title. I said it to him.
Yeah.
And he did.
And he did, yeah.
I can look back on it now, and I know it was that first story was turned down because it wasn't very good. That thing will never see the light of day. So you actually you did make the right decision there. But it did. It spurred me on to write a better story. It worked out really well. I'm very proud of that story. I do get a lot of comments about it. Some of them are good. And no, really, it really did get me a lot of attention at the time. So I'm still very happy with it. And I do. That's one I will frequently read from when I do readings.
Well, I'm glad it worked out the way it did, because I remember one of my first professional sales was to Apex Magazine, and it was a story called "To Know How to See," and I remember it's Jason Sizemore was the only editor who ever gave me multiple chances, and he, you know, it's like he read it and he's like, "Well, I don't think it's right, but you know, if you could rewrite it and emphasize this and de-emphasize that, you know, I'll take another look at it." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And so then he read it again, and he's like going, "I really like it, but in reemphasizing this, you made it go too far that way." So I was like, I probably did like four attempts before it finally made it into the pages of Apex, but it ended up being, you know, such a, you know, a much better story because he was willing to take the time to do that. And that's probably been, you know, it was one of the most frustrating experiences, but it ended up being one of the better short stories that I had done at the time. And I'm glad that I was able to kind of pay it forward there and make RJ work a little bit harder for it and get a better story out of it.
And it worked out well for everybody, for sure.
Yeah.
So to Daniel Dark's comment about vampires, I actually am working on a new vampire thing. I don't know how much we want to get into that, but I am returning to the world of Rebecca Burton, and I thought it would be fun to have her taking on some undead. So that's
fantastic.
Something I've been kind of playing around with for a little while. I have some delays on it, but I'm hoping to get it out pretty soon. We'll see how it goes. But that's been something I've been kicking around for a while now. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Awesome, yeah. Man. That is good news. Glad to hear
vampires.
That. You,
yeah, vampires are my favorite, so yes.
Oh,
that.
Well, see, more motivation.
Yeah, and RG is going to read Vampires Don't Sparkle because she's firmly in the camp that vampires can sparkle and even sometimes should sparkle. So she's going to definitely read your anthology, Michael. So, with that in mind.
Especially after, you know, recent events in both RJ and my life, the proceeds from the sale of Vampires Don't Sparkle go to cancer research.
Yes.
So another good reason that everybody should go and pick that one up.
Yes. Well.
All in good fun, RG. She says, shots fired. All in good fun, RG. Yeah, we have a very raucous chat room tonight. They're out of control in there. But she says she will buy it. She says she will buy it. So, yeah, that you sold a copy there, Michael.
Nice.
Yeah, but
I like my
vampires. It is a great anthology. All joking aside, it is a very high quality. I mean, what a roster too! Look who's on it. I mean, it is really good.
Yeah, when we started that, you know, it's when I started, I'm like going, okay, I'm going to get, you know, 12, you know, 15 vampire stories. They're all going to be alive, you know, and nothing could have been further from the truth. You know, we've got, you know, Japanese J-pop robot vampires.
Mm-hmm.
We've got,
you're welcome.
You know, we've got the quote unquote real story of how Dracula came about. We've got, you know, carnival vampires. We've got, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's all over the map.
Lucy Snyder.
Oh my God. If I challenge
the Lucy Snyder
out there,
thing, you know,
oh my God. I challenge anyone out there to read Lucy Snyder's story. Okay. Can I give the title here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The title of the story
is I Fuck Your Sunshine.
yeah.
And it is the character whose point of view it's from. If you can read that and you're not reading it in Natasha, full Natasha voice from Bullwinkle. I mean, it is amazing. It is amazing.
As far as writers go, though, I mean, I do want to say that is an example of, you know, how to, you know, come up with something that's totally out of the box and distinctive, and that's how you can make the cut in an anthology. You know, bringing something that's really unique, you know, and that's, I think, you know, RJ's approach in that anthology is a good lesson for writers who are coming into an anthology where there is a lot of vampire stories obviously out there, and how am I going to make the list, you know, and that's a good example.
Right.
I mean, you really come at it with a totally out there kind of thing, and that's, you know, that's how you get in these things sometimes. So that is young writer lesson moment here on the Star Chamber show.
Yeah, another lesson that I'm sure RJ has learned over the years is as well is don't throw anything away. You know, it's like if you make a major cut from something. It's like one of the first short story sales I had was going back to the audiobook of Cinema of Shadows. There was a portion of the prologue to Cinema of Shadows that I cut because we were basically seeing an event happen, and later in the book she describes the event to someone, and I thought it was better to hear her describe it, not knowing if we believed it or not, rather than actually, you know, be there for it. So I had cut that whole scene. And then, but it takes place on Halloween night. And later there was an anthology that was looking for Halloween stories, and they asked me if I had something. And I said, well, you know, if I polish this up a little bit, it could be a self-contained story. And so I had cut it for the book, but I sent it into them, and they ended up buying it for the anthology. So, you know, it's just, you never know, you know, what, you know, just because something doesn't work for the project that you're working on now doesn't mean that it won't come in handy for something in the future.
That's true. I actually just told a story very recently that'll be out in December. I think that sucker's maybe 5 years old. you know, sometimes you have to wait for the right market to come along. It was a weird Western. And they're just, it wasn't a good fit for a lot. I don't know, Stephen, you probably remember when Michael Noss was putting together a weird Western anthology, and then it just didn't get funded. I don't know. I want to say 2013 or 14, and I wrote it for that, and then I had nothing to do with it for a while. But then someone else was putting together a weird Western anthology, so I finally recently sold it, and it'll be out shortly. So.
Cool.
You know, sometimes you have to wait for the right market.
I had the same thing happen because I wrote a zombie High Noon story for that Michael Nost anthology, and ended up reworking it for an Appalachian anthology. They wanted Appalachian zombie stories, so I ended up reworking it and setting it in Appalachia. And ended up selling it to that. So, it's, yeah, so, I mean, You know, it's like some of these anthologies have really very specific and very weird themes, you know. Like there was a zombie King Kong anthology that was out there several years ago. And I just kept thinking to myself, if I write a zombie King Kong story and it doesn't get accepted, where the hell am I going to sell the zombie King Kong story? So you know, it's funny how you think about all the stories that get rejected, and then all the editors that are flooded with, you know, pirate alien stories or whatever.
You know. This is like the eighth one I read today. What's going on? Yeah, that kind of thing.
I know.
It'd be amusing. Zombie King Kong again? What?
What are the odds?
You could do it as a zombie Queen Kong.
Yes.
Oh, man. That's, well, cool, man. Yeah, that's, let's see, I'm just checking the chat room here. We've got a lot of chatter going on in here. Yeah, it seems like most
I can
of
only
the,
imagine.
Yeah. Oh, it's
right?
Good. It's good. Yeah, they're kind of reinforcing what you're saying. Yeah, a lot of the authors in there have a number of titles that they're kind of holding back that, you know, may not, you know, have fit things, you know, a year or two ago, but, you know, they're, you know, might come into play as the market shift and change. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, that's what they're getting at here.
Sometimes it's fun to just go through your trunk stories and just, you know, give mm-hmm. something another stab. You know, see if, you know, you can look at it from a different angle and add something to it that wasn't there before.
Yep. Awesome. And we got about 3 minutes and 50 seconds left in the show. So I want to make sure that both, since we have two guests tonight, RJ and Danielle, get to say, you know, where they can be found by listeners to connect with them and learn
more.
They're
right here, Stephen.
Well, I know that.
Well, right here. I'll be here for you.
Social media, websites, that kind of fun stuff, yeah.
Sure.
All that good stuff. RJ, did you want to go first?
So, sure. I'm on rjsullivanfiction.com. And then I actually have a stalk RJ tab, which gives you my Twitter and all the rest if you want to get me further into it. But that's the easiest way to do it. So that's how you find me.
Excellent. My website is pretty easy. It's just my name, DanielleMusing.com. Musing is spelled MUETHING. And same, I have links to my Facebook, my Twitter. So you can find me on there. Yeah.
And then also right now I'm on the homepage. I've got all the links about Haunting Obsession, the audiobook. There's a 7-minute preview that is different from what was just played. So you can hear the morning after scene that I talked about earlier, the first 7 minutes
awesome.
Of that. I think it's a fantastic clip that you guys can check out right now. So that's
cool.
Right there at the top of our website.
Yeah, I just updated my website today and put all those videos out there as well. So check it all out.
Thank
Fantastic.
You for having me, Stephen. I really enjoyed this.
Well,
yeah, this
I'm glad
very
you
fun,
did.
So thank you.
Yeah, they say in the chat room that they got their money's worth this episode, even though it is free, folks, to listen to the Star Chamber show. But they did get their money's worth.
There we go. We ain't the police.
but no, it's been a great episode, and I really appreciate both of you coming on because I definitely there's been a great synergy between you two on the Haunting Obsession, you know, project, and I do, you know, just for my two cents, I hope you two collaborate in going forward on other things. Fantastic team.
Thank you.
We're gonna do our best to make that happen.
Yep.
All right. So RJ, Michael, you guys taking on from here for the last minute and 20.
Well, I've got a question for Danielle first. what is the other two books that you've done?
The other ones I've done, my first one was called Letters to Paul from the Journal of Lacey Henriksen. And it's just a series of letters that a girl writes to her friend who's in a coma, and which is a beautiful book. And then the second one is called Ultimate Sacrifice. So it's a good creepy thriller book, great for Halloween coming up here. So as well as Haunting Obsession, a ghost story, perfect for Halloween.
Yes,
so,
perfect.
Yeah.
Very good.
Thank you, Brad.
Very good.
So
all right.
While you're here, we've got to plug you in.
Always
if anybody happens to be in the Indianapolis area this coming weekend, be sure to stop by Horror Hound Weekend and check it all out.
I'm so sad I can't go. Oh my gosh. There's so many good people there this year.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And with that said, yeah, we're going to be wrapping up here. And we'll catch you next week, Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Star Chamber Show. Been a great one, everyone. So take care, everybody. Until next week, have a great night.
Night, everybody.
Good
Bye.
Night.
Bye.